front lines and on the brink.
Is that a shot?
Yeah.
The Cold War-style standoff between Russia and the West. 100,000 Russians massing at the Ukraine border. Now American troops on standby. Where will the U.S. soldiers end up? Plus, Hugh Hefner's Playboy, the empire of glamour and excess that helped open the door to a sexual revolution.
He had charm. Charm. He was such a charming man.
But inside, stories of emotional abuse, manipulation, and drugs. How do you think the Me Too movement would have treated Hefner today?
They would have just strung him up by his toenails.
And Jeopardy's Amy Schneider.
You now have the second longest streak in Jeopardy history.
How she's making history tonight. Thanks for joining us. Tonight, American service personnel have been put on alert, ready for a possible deployment, as tensions continue to rise on the Ukraine border, where tens of thousands of Russian troops are massed, waiting. ABC's senior foreign correspondent Ian Pannell went to the front lines.
Here along the front lines of the Ukraine-Russia crisis, the air can seem eerily quiet. The crunch of snow underfoot, occasionally interrupted by gunfire in the distance.
Is that a shot?
Yeah. Yes.
But the Ukrainian troops here say they're under constant threat. This shell-shot factory, riddled with bullets and shrapnel, bearing witness to an 8-year struggle between the Ukrainian military and Russian-backed separatists.
General Pannell,
good morning.
Ian Pannell, good morning, sir. How are you?
Fine, sir. Can you?
General Alexander Pavlyuk has been fighting since 2014, and now he says concerns that Russia will soon invade are at an all-time high.
Does it feel that there is a greater threat today than at any time recently?
We are waiting, and we're waiting calmly. If they come, we'll fight. Behind us are our families, our homes. And so I think it will not be at all easy for them to take Ukraine.
Over the past month, Russian military presence along the border to the east has grown to around 100,000 troops. The Russian Defense Ministry releasing footage showing troops practicing what they say are merely drills.
Mr. Putin doesn't think Ukraine is a sovereign country. And yet, Ukraine is moving gradually and inexorably towards Europe. And he wants to stop that.
President Putin says he doesn't plan to invade, he doesn't plan to attack.
First of all, what Putin says is never the truth. The force they've created is large, powerful, but it is not enough to seize Ukraine. We have people who are ready to fight and will fight. If we will be given the weapons, the help that we need, I think Putin will give up his ideas.
The U.S. is delivering support. This shipment of 200,000 pounds of lethal aid landing over the weekend, with another shipment expected soon. And today, the Pentagon announcing that 8,500 U.S. troops have been placed on heightened alert, preparing for deployment orders, although no final decisions have been made.
The United States has taken steps to heighten the readiness of its forces at home and abroad, so that they are prepared to respond to a range of contingencies.
I don't think we should read too much into this announcement from the Pentagon. I think that this is a prudent decision today to increase the awareness of the readiness status of those forces.
Diplomats from the U.S. and Russia met last week to ease tensions, but they've only seemed to increase. Secretary of State Antony Blinken promising a written response to Russia's security demands, which include a guarantee that Ukraine wouldn't join NATO. The US has ruled that out, insisting over the weekend on CNN that the letter is by no means a concession.
If a single additional Russian force goes into Ukraine in an aggressive way, as I said, that would trigger a swift, a severe, and a united response from us and from Europe.
U.S. diplomats' families have been ordered to evacuate the country, and U.S. citizens advised to leave Ukraine amid a do-not-travel advisory warning. And President Biden holding a secure video call with European leaders earlier today.
It's important that they have a common view and a common understanding of the situation on the ground so that when decisions are made, and if a decision is made to use military capability, that all of the countries have been aligned from the top on down.
But as NATO defenses stiffen, these kinds of threats are just part of everyday life for so many Ukrainians, like Alexei and his librarian wife, Svetlana, who we met in Ukraine last month.
Have you had this conversation? What will you do as a family if, God forbid, the Russians cross the border and come here?
It's really difficult to plan because you don't know what to expect.
The posters on the library wall give advice on how to identify landmines and grenades and what to do if shelling starts.
Do people talk about the Russians being on the border? Are people concerned?
I would say no.
The fighting first began in 2014 after Ukraine deposed its pro-Russia president. Protesters swarming the capital of Kiev in an uprising known as the Revolution of Dignity or the Maidan Revolution.
We are not terrorists, we are free people that want to live in a free, in a good country without corruption, with good laws, with good standards of living.
The president was accused of corruption and trying to turn the country closer to Putin's Russia. Ukraine, a former nuclear power that was part of the Soviet Union until 1991, was torn between protesters who said they wanted to become a modern European democracy and security forces, leading to months of violent clashes that left over 100 people dead and the president ousted.
We have only one finish. We must to win and we must to build our new country, which will be a part of civilized world.
But in a swift response, Russian forces invaded and annexed the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine and backed separatists in the east. Although a 2015 peace agreement ended large-scale fighting, the deadly conflict has smoldered on.
The actions that the Russians took in 2014 were the first time that an armed force from one country invaded another country to change those borders since the Nazis invaded to start World War II.
Today, the Ukrainian army is much better equipped to fight back, but still here on the front line in Avdiivka, soldiers like Ivan are forced to make the most of rudimentary resources like this periscope.
It's Soviet Union times optics, but now it's still working good.
Old-fashioned technology.
Yeah, old technology, yeah.
If you and I were not stood down in this bunker, if we stood up there, what would happen?
Probably we will be killed by sniper, because
it's that serious, that close.
Yeah.
The troops here say they have the country behind them and are ready to fight to the death, knowing that if Putin really intends to cross the border, they face overwhelming odds.
Our thanks to Ian. Up next, inside the Playboy Mansion, the women who were there describe a hidden dark side.
Later this week on Nightline, we're with country stars Brothers Osborne, going back to where they got their start.
We've all played this room numerous times before anyone had a clue who we were.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, Hugh Hefner's Playboy empire wasn't just a brand. It was a driving force in the sexual revolution of the last century. But on the inside, not everyone was happy. There are accusations of dark secrets, stories of abuse and manipulation.
The minute we met, he saw this wholesome, all-American girl, and I fit the role.
From the outside looking in, Sandra Theodore's life with Hugh Hefner was a fairy tale. Glamour, parties, with a real-life Prince Charming.
He had all the trappings. He had charm. Charm, charm, charm. He was such a charming man.
Before the fairy tale was dashed, describe the trappings. What did the fairy tale consist of?
Well, first of all, there was the castle. He showed me romantic movies, and he played the part. And I was wrapped up in the fact that he told me that we were having children and we'd be together forever. And I believed him.
But behind the gates, inside the Playboy mansion, Sandra says she felt imprisoned in a cycle of emotional abuse, manipulation, and drugs.
As the years went on, little things started scaring me about him. Like, how could he be like this? How could I love a man like this?
Hugh Hefner opened the door for the sexual revolution, I will agree.
He represents, for this woman here, freedom. But Playboy has its dark side.
There was a secret world. Playboy was all about powerful men preying on beautiful young women.
Sandra's story, and that of many other former playmates and bunnies, colleagues and friends, part of a new docuseries from A&E. Secrets of Playboy, re-examining the controversial legacy of Hugh Hefner, who died in 2017.
I really wasn't aware of the bigger allegations that are in this series when I began my research. I was really just wanting to ask the women of Playboy to talk to me about their experiences in a really open, honest way. When you talk about the legacy of Playboy, it's really mixed. And I wanted to be very honest about that. Because Playboy was a progressive beacon from the 50s onwards.
At that point in time, I wasn't interested in marriage, but I was interested in Playboy Enterprises because women were taking their power. They were in command of themselves. So I thought, well, wow.
Playboy changed the world. It opened up the sexual revolution to be talked about, and it brought women to the forefront to explore that sexuality.
Jonathan Baker, a Hollywood director and longtime friend of Hefner, is also featured in the series.
Because of the platform that was opened up to the world, women had more opportunity.
My bunny name was Bunny Jackie, and I started working at Playboy in 1967 for 11 and a half years. We definitely got paid well. And I bought a car and I lived the way I wanted to.
Playboy was the place where a lot of people of color got great opportunities on television, in the magazine, in the clubs that were not being offered anywhere else. I didn't want to gloss over that. And I also wanted to notice how possible it is that there can be an entity that is this great progressive beacon that's also covering up a lot of darkness. Sandra Theodore is the interview that changed everything for me. And she's the reason that we will completely reframe how we see Hefner in Playboy.
Theodore and Hefner dated for 5 years. She was a playmate and centerfold. But she says as the years went on, the control became overwhelming.
I was followed in the beginning and later. I could not be out having an evening for myself. I didn't have my own money. He kept me away from other people. When we would go out together, we were treated like royalty. So that kept me thinking, okay, well, if everyone thinks he's so wonderful, then it must be me.
Life with Hefner, she says, pushed to a breaking point.
The drugs fueled how many people you could get in your bed. And then all of a sudden, there's three of us. And three girls became five. And it got ridiculous up there. He twisted my mind so much that if I loved him, that proved how much I loved him.
And so what do you think about what was happening back then? There were so much drugs. Were the women always able to give consent?
No, no. And even when they didn't, some things continued.
You also describe him as being a voyeur, and there were times when other men were brought into the situation. Did you, in your mind, give consent to having sex with those other men?
No, no, I hated it. I never wanted any of that.
There was no coercion. There were no one was feeding these girls drugs. Yeah, in the 70s, there were Quaaludes. They were there, but they weren't being forced down people's throats. Were there orgies? Yes, there were. Everybody participated. I was very conservative. I didn't participate in those acts.
When you talk about Playboy, we all kind of enjoyed that fact in a tongue-in-cheek way that, you know, what happens at the mansion stays at the mansion, like Vegas, there's an aspect of consent. And I kept struggling with that as I was reporting this. Where is the abuse if you've consented? Where does the line begin? When you start to talk about someone like Hef, and he's slowly, slowly, slowly bringing the women in around him into these extreme sexual acts, you realize that it's not about consent anymore, because there's all this grooming going on, making them feel like the more extreme acts are normal, and that that's something expected of them.
Hefner was a force throughout his life, continuing to push the norms of sexual liberation and free expression. In 2010, Hefner spoke with my colleague John Donvan to discuss the iconic brand.
Playboy products, that rabbit, that trademark, is famous everywhere. Maybe other people are looking back a little bit too. Maybe they want a little piece of the world that they missed.
You're saying there's a bit of a nostalgia. And what was there then that's not here now?
A little more style, a little more class, a little more romantic connection.
And even as he aged, a near constant stream of women who didn't, on display in the breakout series, The Girls Next Door. One of those stars, Holly Madison.
As a girlfriend, I'm extremely devoted.
Love you.
I love you, darling.
Like Sandra, three decades before her, describes a controlling and traumatic life inside the mansion.
Another thing that reminds me of a cult is how it was so easy to get isolated from the outside world there. You had a 9 o'clock curfew. You were encouraged to not have friends over. You weren't really allowed to leave unless it was like a family holiday.
Was Holly feeling the things that she was feeling? Yes, but that's not Hef's fault. I mean, the rules are what they are, right? Yes, there was a curfew. And yes, the girls had to be in early, but Hef was a jealous guy.
By breaking their silence, these former playmates shedding new light on the complicated founder of an empire built on a fantasy.
I want young girls to know it's not good. It's not good. Stand your ground and respect yourself, and don't let anyone tell you if you love me, you will, you know, because if they love you, they will not ask this of you.
Secrets of Playboy airs Monday at 9 p.m. on A&E. And finally tonight, Jeopardy's Amy Schneider.
Amy.
Who is MC Hammer? What is a hedgehog?
Yes.
What is 1999 bottles of beer on the wall?
That's right, yeah.
She's done it again. Jeopardy champion Amy Schneider with another record-breaking night.
And a 39-day total of $1,319,800. You now have the second longest streak in Jeopardy history.
Clinching the number two spot for most consecutive wins, raising the visibility of the trans community.
The best part for me has been being on TV, you know, as my true self, expressing myself and representing the entire community of trans people, and just kind of showing a smart, confident woman and, you know, just doing something super normal like being on Jeopardy.
Schneider aims to beat Ken Jennings' 74-game streak, a huge undertaking. But if anyone's up for it, she is. And that's Nightline for tonight. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.